Thanks so much, Rachel. So good morning. My name is Captain William Den. I'm a 2006 West Point grad, current student here at the Kennedy School. Dina, I wanted to thank you very much for inviting me today. I know we're short in time, so I'll try to keep under the time limit. This morning, I did want to discuss a little bit about the role of women in combat. Some of my own personal observations as a former combat arms officer, now an intelligence officer. I first deployed to Mosul, northern Iraq, in late 2007. My battalion was sent to reinforce a 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment, who were undermanned at the time and facing some pretty tough fight, some of the heaviest fighting at the time in northern Iraq. Every day in patrol, I would meet Iraqi men who were extremely afraid to provide any intelligence or useful information to our platoon. It was a common line that they never saw anything, and they just really wanted us to get out of their area for fear of retribution. Their uncooperative nature was particularly problematic when day after day we kept getting hit on the same route leading into our sector. So after about 6 months of fighting on this route and talking to the same Iraqis whose homes overlooked the road that was entering our sector, we finally had a breakthrough. And I vividly remember this day when the 7-year-old little boy and his mother finally admitted to me that around 2 o'clock each day, a group of insurgents would stand by outside their home, wait for us, explode their IED, and end up shooting at us, and then escape along the back alley. So the next day we knew what to expect, and this time we ambushed those insurgents while they waited. So long story short, we never had to deal with any fighting along that route. So by all means, this was a success story, but it occurred to me that these Iraqis knew this information well before. But the women and children weren't comfortable to talk to us. They were all tired of the fighting and the lack of security, but it took months to build a sufficient cultural rapport for them to confide in us. So at the time in 2007, you know, I had really thought about this, that if we had women in my platoon, I was certain that we could have obtained some of this critical intelligence much sooner. They would have been much more apt in overcoming these tremendous cultural and gender barriers that prevented me from talking to women and children, which were more than half the population in my sector. So I'm not the first person to make these observations. Since 2011, U.S. Special Forces have begun embedding women into their units called cultural support teams, precisely to assist in some of these observations I had with my own unit. One such female is Emily Miller, who you're going to be hearing from later today. But aside from the intelligence value, what we saw in Iraq and Afghanistan was a battlefield without any definable front lines, where women were already actively engaged in combat against the enemy. Women officers and NCOs in logistics, transportation, military police, engineer, and ordnance branches were bravely leading their platoons through firefights daily. One such story was of Army Medic Specialist Monica Brown, whose platoon in 2007 was attacked with a roadside bomb that wounded 5 soldiers in her unit. Brown ran through insurgent gunfire and used her body to shield wounded comrades as mortars fell around them. Her actions earned her the Silver Star for bravery and valor. So in 2013, when Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta ordered the Joint Chiefs of Staff to study the feasibility of opening all military jobs to women by 2016, I thought it was a tremendous first step in leveraging diversity across all our units. Women could add immense value to our combat units, and the fact that they were already engaged in combat, I thought it was about time to recognize that. So now today in 2014, the reality is there still remains a lot of opposition. All the time, I'm encountering men both in and out of uniform, as well as women who believe this is a terrible idea. Opponents will argue that this policy is merely a social experiment, a political decision that undermines military effectiveness and decreases our ability to win wars. They argue that women are not physically capable of meeting the high standards needed in our infantry, armor, artillery, and special forces units. And third, they argue that the morale and discipline will be eroded by sexual misconduct that is bound to happen in these hyper-masculine, all-male units. So as we look at these criticisms, the reality is we have to address them and tackle them head-on, because without the buy-in from the force and the military and society, we may undermine this new policy as we go forward with implementation. So first, I hope that you saw in my own story that women can add tremendous value to our combat units, not only in intelligence gained, but there are many studies, especially ones pioneered here at Harvard, which show how much diversity can improve team performance. Male and female teams simply outperform single-gender teams and result in better decision-making. The nature of the battlefield has also changed today. Today, we need flexible, adaptive junior leaders and units that are able to do a widespread variety of tasks. and be able to solve complex problems on the battlefield. From negotiations, conflict resolution, development, governance, advise and assist missions, these are all tasks that our combat units are performing. And in my opinion, women can only help in assisting these units do it better. Second, in terms of women's physical capacity, you know, the Army and Marine Corps have been clear that clearly defined physical standards must be established for each combat job. I think that's the right way to go about it, and I agree that these standards must be high to maintain our combat effectiveness. But what we've seen is that there are women that can meet these standards and even exceed these standards. So while we may only be talking about a small percentage of the female population, in my opinion, if they can meet the standards, there's no moral or legal reasons why they should be excluded from these jobs. Finally, on the issue of sexual misconduct, clearly this will be a problem early on, but it will require leadership to control it just like every other discipline problem that military units face. We've dealt with this problem before when military police units, engineer units, ordnance units, submarines, fighter wings all had to include women. So to me, it's a moot point for these career fields today, and I believe with supervision and good junior leadership, we can make it work for the infantry as well. So in closing, it's my opinion that including women in frontline units would be much more than an exercise in social equality. I think it will be a valuable enhancement of military effectiveness and our national security. We certainly need to be cautious in how we handle the transition, but I'm confident and hopeful for the future for our sisters in uniform. So good luck to everybody today in the forum. Thank you again, and I think I'm going to be followed by Commander Dave Smith.